from KMXT in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Jay Barrett. Coming up on this first show of the new year, we get a projection for this year's King Run on the Nushigek and just how many people are employed in the seafood industry in Alaska. All that and more coming up on the Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
Some new data from the state of Alaska indicates that the number of fishing jobs in the state has been inching upwards over the last few years. Mike Mason tells us more.
The new data about seafood harvesting jobs in the state was published in the November edition of Alaska Economic Trends. One of the co-authors of the article is Josh Warren. He's an economist with the Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development. Warren admits that it's difficult to get a firm grasp of how many fishing jobs actually exist in Alaska.
All the other wage and salary jobs in the state are because of UI tax are reported. So I know for pretty much every other occupation in the state, I know most of their information, like what occupation they're doing and where they're doing it and how much they're earning, things like that. Where with seafood harvesting, the only real information we have about who's working is the permit holders, who we have a decent amount of information about. But for the crew, all we know is if they have a crew license. We don't know where they fished or even if they fished.
Since data about fishing jobs is so difficult to get, Warren and the other researchers working on the project had to use the results of surveys sent to active permit holders to get data about Alaska's seafood harvesters. They then used those survey results to make some assumptions about the harvesting sector. Salmon fishermen make up a majority of the seafood harvesters in Alaska.
Salmon is definitely, by and large, the most of the share. They have over 55% of the jobs in seafood harvesting are salmon. And a large portion of that is from your region, from the Bristol Bay Sockeye Fisheries. Southeast also has a large amount of salmon, and some of the other regions too. But if you look at it by value, groundfish and those kind of fisheries dominate those, and it's just because of the sheer poundage that they land.
Last year, there were on average about 4.5 thousand salmon harvesting jobs in Alaska when the data is spread out to produce a monthly average. 15% of the seafood harvesting jobs were in the groundfish fisheries, 12% were focused on catching halibut. The data included in the article shows that in July of last year, there were over 24.7 thousand seafood harvesting jobs in Alaska, with an average of over 20,000 in June and August. When the data is used to produce a monthly average, it shows that last year there were over 8.1 thousand monthly fishing jobs in Alaska, which Warren confirms is up from the monthly average numbers put together for 2007 through 2011.
I think some of that might wind up being from the every year doing the survey and so getting either better data or people are actually hiring more crew to fish their permits. There might be some aspects of having increased fishermen, but so many of the fisheries are limited in that fashion that it seems hard to see that. One of the other causes that might lead to it is that some of the fisheries are having employment in like one extra month than they normally would. If they're employed for just one day in an extra month, then that can spike the average.
According to the article about seafood harvesting jobs, of the 31.8 thousand people who fished commercially last year in Alaska, about 22,000 were crew members. About 9.8 thousand were actual permit holders. The Department of Labor has been trying to gather additional information about the scope of crew jobs in Alaska.
One of the main critiques of our articles in the past have been that we're understating the employment for the fisheries because we don't have any real information on the prep and cleanup. And that's been simply because, as we mentioned, it's not reported. And the way we get the harvesting information is looking at the landings reported, but they don't talk about how long they've been getting ready to make that very first landing or how much they have to work after the last landing. So we did, on the same survey, we had one section that was asking about how many crew you used to fish your permit. And then we had another section asking, like, where you worked to get ready to fish your permit.
Prep and cleanup work on the edges of the fishing seasons generated an additional monthly average of about 385 jobs. About 86% of the jobs were held by men. 85% of permit holders are men, and last year about 88% of the crew members were men. The average age of crewmen is 34 years old. The average age of permit holders is 47 years old. Since most fishing jobs are seasonal, that often means that participants hold other jobs. The article notes that about 30% of permit holders and 27% of crew had jobs that were reported last year, with earnings of over $191 million. Turns out that about 80% of the harvesters who worked a regular job last year were salmon harvesters. Nearly three-quarters of all the permit holders in the YK Delta held a second job last year, while just 27% of Bristol Bay permit holders had another reportable job. The most common type of other job for both permit holders and crew last year was construction. Fishermen also held food processing, maintenance, moving, and retail jobs. You can find the data about seafood harvesting jobs in Alaska in the November edition of Alaska Economic Trends. It can be found on the website of the Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development. In Dillingham, I'm Mike Mason.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is supported in part by the Pebble Partnership. Listening before we act. Find out more at pebblepartnership.com.
Recently, the Alaska Board of Fisheries set up an experimental harvest in the Aleutian Islands that might have benefited small communities like ADAC, but as KUCB's Lauren Rosenthal reports, ADAC had its eyes on a much bigger prize.
Atka mackerel move fast and live low. They're strong swimmers that like to hide along rocky sea bottoms, and in the Aleutians especially, they can be tough to catch. But Orville Huntington, a member of the Alaska Board of Fisheries from Huslia, thought it was worth a shot. At a meeting this fall, Huntington told the board he supported a plan to shift a tiny amount of Atka mackerel quota into the Aleutians. He said it could be good for fishermen and for residents of communities like ADAC.
Seems to me that this does give an opportunity for Alaskan citizens to at least try something new.
The board bumped up the catch amount to encourage more fishermen to participate, and they approved the new small boat harvest for mackerel. It seemed like good news for ADAC. The island's economy is dependent on its seafood processing plant, and they've wanted to branch out for a while, just not into mackerel. Dave Frazier is a board member of the nonprofit ADAC Community Development Corporation, or ECDC. Frazier helped them campaign to get the new mackerel fishery struck down and to improve their chances of getting a federal pollock harvest approved.
We were concerned that shifting 10% of the mackerel quota into critical habitat would have had consequences in terms of the ability of nymph protected resources to approve the pollock fishery in the Aleutians.
Mackerel and pollock are both big food sources for Stellar Sea Lions, an endangered species that the National Marine Fisheries Service has gone to great lengths to protect. For years, they closed down commercial fishing in big swaths in the Aleutians. But that might be about to change. NIMS has been working on a court-ordered study of their sea lion protections all year. As part of that, they've been examining ways to safely open up more fishing grounds in the Aleutians, including the spot where ADAC wants to fish a small amount of pollock quota. Frazier says they got the allocation years ago for the purpose of helping ADAC grow.
If it's open, that would allow access to roughly 19,000 tons of pollock, which would be a huge benefit to the corporation and to the community of ADAC.
That's because even a small amount of pollock is worth a lot of money, more than the mackerel fishery that the state set up. And even though NIMS is considering more fishing right now, it wasn't clear if they'd support two new fisheries on sea lion food sources, mackerel and pollock, in an area that's still important habitat. So in late November, ECDC filed a petition with the Board of Fish to take back their mackerel vote. The board called an emergency meeting and asked Nicole Kimball, the state's federal fisheries coordinator, to clarify. Kimball told the board that nymphs probably wouldn't want to allow fishing for both mackerel and pollock.
So, for instance, this pollock fishery that is potentially on the table and potentially could be allowable under this new biological opinion may not be on the table as a worst-case scenario under this action.
Several Board of Fish members said it wasn't their intent to preclude a pollock harvest, and it wasn't worth it to put mackerel first. So after consulting with a lawyer, they voted unanimously to take back the mackerel fishery. Frazier says there's been no harm done to ACDC's goal, as far as they know.
It was an action by the board with the best of intentions, with unintended consequences.
Now that they've ironed out what new fishery gets precedent in the area, ADAC still has to wait for NIMS to release a draft of their biological study on sea lion protections. That should arrive in late winter. Then ADAC will have a better idea of when or if they might be able to catch pollock, a resource they'd still be sharing with the sea lions. In On Alaska, I'm Lauren Rosenthal.
In recent years, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game has had a little trouble accurately predicting the size of the king salmon run to the Nishigaak River, which is one of the largest king runs in the state. As a result, for the third year in a row, Fish and Game is not putting out a preseason forecast for Nishigaak River kings. We hear once again from our pal Mike Mason.
While many of the king salmon runs in Alaska have come up short of projections, the run to the Nishigaak River has been doing pretty good. This year, over 113,000 kings were counted as escapement to the Nishigaak River, which is well within the escapement goal range of 55,000 to 120,000 fish. Chuck Brazil is the area research biologist for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
A lot of the runs across the state have been or were depressed from a time period, you know, from 2007 to current times. Right now, there's still some runs that are lower than average. Nishigaak had 3 or 4 years where we had really low returns, but we always seem to make the lower end or near the midpoint of our spawning escapement goals. In the last 3 years, the run has rebounded relatively nicely, and we've had really good returns compared to other systems.
While the run appears to be doing good, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game is not yet ready to put out a formal preseason forecast. Instead, like the last 2 years, the department is only putting out a commercial harvest projection. This year, over 18.6 thousand kings were caught in Bristol Bay's commercial fisheries. 15.3 thousand of those kings were taken in the Nishigaak District. It's anticipated that those kings were bound for the Nishigaak River. The 2014 Nishigaak River Chinook salmon harvest projection is 21,000 fish. Unless there are some directed king salmon openings next year, most, if not all, of those kings will be taken in Bristol Bay's massive sockeye fishery. Brazil says one of the contributing factors that makes it difficult to put out a Nishigaak River king salmon forecast is the fact that often the kings and the sockeye enter the Nishigaak River at the same time.
The tool that we use is the Didson sonar on the Nishigaak to assess escapement of salmon, and that project was originally designed to count sockeye salmon, and it does a really good job at counting sockeye. It counts about 99% of the sockeye run, which is a really good number. And right now we're looking at what proportion of the Chinook salmon run using hydroacoustics that we could be potentially missing outside of the ensonified range within the Nishigaak River, because we only ensonify about a third of the river.
Back in 2011, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game began a three-year project intended to answer some of the questions about the effectiveness of the counting operation. Brazil confirms that the project will continue for another 3 years.
And hopefully at the end of that time period, you know, we'll be able to come up with a total run estimate where we'll be able to put out a relatively accurate forecast at that point.
Fish and Game counts escapement to the Nishigaak River at a sonar counting operation that is set up every year in early June near the village of Portage Creek. In Dillingham, I'm Mike Mason.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
And by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted, hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amsea.org or 907-747-3287.
And that's all for this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report. Big thanks to KDLG's Mike Mason in Dillingham and KUCB's Lauren Rosenthal in Unalaska. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Jay Barrett.